This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And a very good evening to you if you've just joined us. It's Thoriso Maloka standing in for Sebenzile Nkambule all the way from midnight till 12 o'clock. So we've got 27 more minutes of the show. 4 hours of broadcasting. Time flies. Time flies when you're having fun. It is 23 minutes past 11 o'clock. And we are going into a rather sensitive and a rather, I want to say, heavy conversation. I said earlier on that on Saturday when I had... I went to the mall and I heard a language and I thought it was Turkish, but it was Arab. Well, I thought it was one of the Turkish languages and it was Arab. And interestingly, it turned out that the gent that was doing my brows, that was, what do they call it? Threading my brows, rather, is Palestinian. And in conversation, and just, he then told me that he was Palestinian and he showed me or introduced me to one of his colleagues who had 23 members of his family gunned down in Palestine or Palestine. And hence, they then found their way to come to South Africa and formulate some way of living here in South Africa. So this is quite a sensitive one, but more so we are, just unpacking it at the perspective of this being the last day of the general debate of the 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly. And we unpack the situation in Palestine at this particular point in time and our relationship with South Africa with Palestine. And we're going to have this conversation with Professor Daryl Glazer, who is a professor and head of political studies at WITS. Good evening, Prof, and thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
We appreciate your time. Prof, at this point in time in 2021, at the back of the 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly, what is the situation in Palestine as we speak?
The situation in Palestine is grim, but it's a kind of holding pattern. It's a situation where there's a fundamental conflict between two peoples over this territory between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. And there's constantly this expectation that something dramatic is going to happen if there's not some solution found to the conflict. But, the Israelis are a very militarily and economically powerful state, and they found a way to sort of manage and contain the conflict at a fairly low level of intensity, partly by farming out some of the work of keeping the Palestinians under control. They farmed that out to the Palestinians' own sort of puppet leadership in the Palestinian Authority. Mahmoud Abbas is like one of the old Bantustan leaders who is he's presiding over the Palestinian Authority, which is a small part of the area between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. It's effectively a Palestinian Bantustan, where a large proportion of the Palestinian population is confined, and this was supposed to be. The creation of this Palestinian Authority was supposed to be a step towards the creation of a Palestinian state covering the West Bank and Gaza. But effectively, and in the early 90s, when South Africa was undergoing its transition, and Northern Ireland was also beginning to sort of sort out its problems, a lot of people thought that Israel would also sort out its problem, because now the Cold War was over and everyone was going to try and sort the world's big conflicts out. And it looked like it was going that way for a while in Israel-Palestine with the Oslo Accords of the early 90s. But Israel never carried out its part of those accords. So that area of the Palestinian Authority was meant to provide the basis for an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank, but the Israelis never allowed that to happen. So it's just remained a Bantustan, and in the meantime, various Jewish settlers from Israel have begun to set up these settlements, or they started already back in the late 1960s, but they've continued inexorably to colonize that land that in the West Bank that was meant to be part of the future Palestinian state. So the two populations have become so scrambled together that it's become very difficult to see how you can even have a two-state solution, which kind of depends on the idea that you can separate these two people out. But the Israelis themselves are making it more difficult for a two-state solution by scrambling these two people together. Now, some people say it's not in Israel's interest to do that because it would be better to separate Israel from most of the West Bank, because otherwise Israel's effectively becoming indirectly responsible for this large Palestinian population, and it becomes a sort of an obvious apartheid state. But the Israeli, the Israeli population itself has moved to the right, and they've come to the conclusion that they can just keep this present situation going indefinitely. They don't have to worry. They don't have to come up with a solution. They've got such power with the most advanced technology, military technology in the world, supplied by the United States, that they can just basically manage this conflict indefinitely.
Now, we're aware that in wording and in stance and in I want to share sharing of messaging, a lot of South Africans, or us as South Africa, are in support, tend to be in support of Palestine. But more recently, and not just more recently, it's happened before, but we've heard President Cyril Ramaphosa specifically just deliver a message that indicated support towards Palestine. What's our international relation with Palestine in South Africa, and what type of support, if any, outside of the wording, is being provided by South Africa, including any form of sanctions, if they may be applied towards the likes of Israel and other, I want to say, oppressing nations towards Palestine?
Well, you see, I mean, of course, during the apartheid period, you know, both the Afrikaners here and the Israelis felt that they were sort of besieged people. They weren't understood by the world community. They were being criticized and isolated. And in fact, the Afrikaners and the Israeli government became big buddies, and the Israeli government helped the apartheid regime get nuclear weapons. So, and there was a lot of mutual sympathy going between the two regimes. So this obviously predisposed the African liberation movements in this country to be pro-Palestinian and hostile to Israel. Basically, since 1994, since the ANC has come to power, what's happened is South Africa's sort of, it hasn't sort of like gone out for all-out war against Israel by any means. It's maintained diplomatic relations, and what it's in fact tried to do is present itself as a potential peacemaker. So the South African government has, and people around it have said things like, oh, we could sort out our problems in South Africa, despite the fact that no one ever thought we could, as in we avoided civil war and we were able to come up with some sort of agreement. Let us now help you. Let us now show you the way in Israel and Palestine, how to reconcile. You know, South Africa's had very little actual influence there. So, you know, the ANC has continued to express sympathy and solidarity with the Palestinians, as it always has, and it criticizes Israel and it votes against Israel at the United Nations. But that's about as far as it goes. But, I mean, the interesting thing happening at the moment is, you know, Israel's launched this huge charm offensive to win over support in Africa. And it's achieved quite a lot of success. For example, it's just achieved observer status at the African Union, Israel has, much to the horror of the South African government, which was never consulted about it, I understand. Basically, you see, it's in the interest of a lot of, especially weaker states in the world, to start cozying up with Israel, because that's a way of cozying up with the United States. Basically, you know, the United States is the big buddy of Israel, and if you want to get off, like Sudan wanted to get off America's list of international terrorist states. So it knew that the way to do that was to get friendly with Israel or to normalize its relations with Israel. And then America was prepared to look more generously at Sudan. So this is one of the interesting dynamics going on at the moment, this attempt by Israel to win over African support, and South Africa sort of holding out against that.
And I mean, there's often conversations around how the African Union is not the most assistive body for the continent itself. But once again, it raises questions towards the northern parts of the continent, to say countries such as Morocco, Algeria, Egypt, there tends to be closer relation to the likes of, you know, in terms of, you know, cultural, traditional and religious affiliation, perhaps. Is there any form of support that is anticipated or expected to come from the more northern parts of the continent, specifically Morocco, Algeria and Egypt, towards Palestine?
Well, you see, things have been going in the opposite direction because, of course, you know, for much of the period of Israel's existence, and even when it was a Jewish colony before it became an independent state of Israel, obviously the Arab world supported the Arab-Palestinian population of Palestine. The Palestinians are an Arab people, so the Arab North Africans, you know, Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Tunisia, and so on, Morocco, they were at least publicly and symbolically supportive of the Palestinians. And of course, a country like Egypt went to war with Israel on several occasions in 1948, in 1956. 1967 and 73. So, you know, they were very hostile to Israel. But what's happened recently is, in fact, that some of those Arab states have now abandoned the Palestinians. And they've decided to get into bed, as it were, with the Israelis instead, heavily pushed by the Americans to do so, especially during the Trump presidency. So unfortunately for the Palestinians, I think it's unfortunate for anyone who wants to see a just solution in that region, it's been going in the reverse. Instead of becoming more supportive of the Palestinians, the Arabs have been abandoning their own fellow Arab Palestinian people. And it's not only in North Africa, but some black African states as well have become more sympathetic to Israel.
Now, let's look into, is there any sparing of women and children in this whole debacle?
Is there any what?
Is there any sparing or sparing of women and children in Palestine at this point in time? And I specifically ask that once again because many countries have taken a pledge for further, and I want to say, heightened protection of women and children in those particular countries. Is there any sparing of women and children in the Palestinian community by the Israelites and on all the other opposing facets, if I may?
Well, you know, it's a strange sort of thing. Israel is so militarily powerful that it can, you know, like the United States, when it attacks the Palestinian militants, it can use precision weapons that enable it to minimize civilian damage, so-called collateral damage, much of the time. But the fact is that, you know, thousands of Palestinians have died, arguably tens of thousands have died, you know, over the decades in conflict with Israel. And that's, you know, a large proportion of the Palestinians who have died will be young men actively engaged in resistance. But there will be, because Israel is often attacking, like in Gaza, densely populated areas. Now, it's a myth that you can have such weapons of such precision that they don't kill, that they kill only armed people and not civilians. And yeah, many hundreds and indeed thousands of children and to a less extent women have died over the years. I mean, Israel doesn't, you know, it's no longer in sort of direct occupation of the most densely populated Palestinian areas, because it pulled out of Gaza and now subjects Gaza to kind of an external siege.
But I mean, Prof,
and
is that
it,
a...
And it leaves the administration of the Palestinian Authority largely to the Palestinian Authority itself. So it's not engaged in continuous contact with the Palestinian population. It's able to. It's the sophisticated military power that's able to sort of govern from a distance. But when it needs to use violence, the Israeli state, it'll use massive violence, and civilians in general will suffer. But you know, if you're talking about women, I mean, you know, they suffer from various directions. The Palestinian Authority, the Gazan Authority, the Hamas in Gaza, none of them, I would suggest, for example, treat women particularly well. So I think women get it from all sides.
Now, I mean, is it a fair, and closer to the closing here, is it a fair representation, you know, to suggest that there is somewhat of I want to say, lesson taking over of specific parts of Palestine by the Israelites? And I ask that coming from a point of just understanding how much of what used to be Palestine the Israelites now have turned into Israel. Do the Palestinians not record those taken over parts who are now being recorded as part of Israel? Do they not, you know, take them in echoes of this is actually Palestine, although it's being recorded as Israel at this point in time? Geographically and truthfully, it is actually still Palestine.
Well, this whole area is disputed. Let's understand that before the entirety of Palestine had an Arab majority, say circa 1900, this entire area had an Arab majority, and basically there was a kind of a colonization movement by which the Jews moved into the area initially during the Ottoman period, and then under British patronage after the First World War. So, and gradually, by one means or another, the Israelis have taken over about you know, about 80% of the land or more. It depends on how you define taken over, but I mean the Palestinians have been the West Bank and Gaza constitute a very small proportion of the area between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean. Israel's taken over a vast majority of that land, and the Palestinians have been left with very little, and that's part of the injustice. The Palestinians have been ethnically cleansed from the majority of the land. They've been pushed into exile or into enclaves. So, yes, I mean, the large proportion of that, of historical Palestine is now part of the internationally recognized state of Israel, indeed. And really what's disputed now is simply the fact, is simply one small part of it, which is the West Bank and Gaza, which is under direct or indirect military occupation by Israel, and that's where the Palestinians still hope to eke out some sort of state for themselves, if they can ever persuade the Israelis to relinquish control of those areas. But it's only a small proportion that's been left to the Palestinians.
Prof, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I can't further highlight how heavy this conversation is, considering that these are people's lives we're talking about, and for many of the people living in Palestine, it's the only life that they've ever known.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Professor Daryl Glazer there, who is the professor and head of political studies at WITS Political Studies.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.